I never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the 26th Skin On podcast. I'm your host, Niall Murphy, and I'm joined by Philip Bagnall and Jason Coyle as per usual.
Hi.
Hello.
What have you guys been watching over the last few weeks or for the last week?
Ooh, okay. Two jumped to mind. One was a wonderful, wonderful rewatch of Magnolia, which I haven't seen in quite a few years. And it's as glorious and brilliant as it always was. It hasn't aged an ounce. The acting is astonishing. And it's that scene of where all the characters sing part of the
Wise Up
is audacious as ever. It's a glorious risk in it.
And it works.
Oh, it really works.
It's a film full of risk.
Yeah.
So many scenes you think just should not work.
No.
Well, Raining Frogs.
There you go.
But I mean, even that, like, the world building and momentum in the film, it's no surprise when something like that happens because of how it's structured and how it's put together.
Yeah.
Jason Robards, oh my God, he's so good in it.
I have a son,
a goddamn regret.
What's his name? It's heartbreaking,
yeah.
His voice.
And obviously PSH, who was with Phil.
This is the part of the movie where you help me out.
Glorious.
I haven't watched it since
he passed. It's fantastic.
One of Tom Cruise's best roles.
Tom Cruise,
he's stunning.
It's just a reminder that if he chooses to, he could be doing this all the time.
And I wish he were.
He is extraordinary. I should have walked away with an Oscar for it. He's just extraordinary.
Yeah.
His charisma, danger, style, pizzazz, everything. It's an extraordinary film.
It's a performance that has everything. You have that confidence and that swagger and that profanity in the first half. And then as things go on and the plot turns come in, and he's slowly broken down until the scene where he's towards the end where he's weeping. And you've never seen Tom Cruise like that.
No, it's the whole thing. It's like, I think Paul Thomas Anderson was pretty young when he made it. It's like 27, 28, something like that. Sickeningly ambitious for somebody that, like, sickeningly ambitious full stop, but I mean, for somebody that young, it's extraordinary film. I think it's a testament to how remarkable Paul Thomas Anderson is that it's my third favourite Paul Thomas Anderson film. Yeah, it's a masterpiece.
It is a masterpiece. It's my favourite Anderson film.
Is it?
It's one of my all-time favourites.
Yeah, no, I mean, I couldn't put anybody off, like, if anybody tells me their favourite Anderson film is X, it's fair enough.
Any
of those films are great.
Yeah.
But, there's not much more to be said, except if you've never seen it somehow, watch it. If you have,
Inherent
watch it
again. Vice. I need it now.
Yes. Oh, you lucky New York Film Festival people who will be seeing it within weeks.
Hello to Kyle Turner and Ilk, by the way.
Swines! But what else are we going to saw? Oh, Night Moves. Yes.
At last.
Very, very interesting.
We've been discussing this a little while ago.
Yeah. Yeah, Jesse Eisenberg is excellent
in
that kind of... He gets a bit of flack that he doesn't seem to have any range, that he just seems to play Jesse Eisenberg all the time, which is absolute nonsense.
He's
so good in this. Mm. So tightly wound, so troubled, but committed to what he aims to do. But I don't want to kind of say everything that happens in it, but there's a plan to blow up at them, and then there's something happens, and then the kind of repercussions of that after it. And his character arc is excellent all the way through it.
It's a great three-act structure, that.
Yeah.
Planning, execution, fallout.
Yeah. I was less enthralled with the fallout than you were. I thought it spent half an hour not really sure where to go. It did the first two acts, which are excellent, and then it kind of stalled for time, kind of like, okay, what we do here, let's do this. And then when it actually did something, it worked. But there was just a time where I felt it was just kind of plodding it on. It just didn't quite work for me.
I know.
Which
okay,
knocked a couple
enough.
Of stars off, but still very, very enjoyable and really, really...
I tell you what you're saying. I personally never felt it plodded. It kept me guessing. Like I say, not quite as... I'd agree that it's not as riveting as the first two acts, just because you're wondering, where is it going to go? But I don't think the film is as unsure of itself. It's building towards something. And as you say, in the last 5 minutes or whatever, it didn't work.
Fabulous last 5 minutes, and really kind of brings it home. Mm. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Curveball. Niall, what did you watch?
I spent all weekend at the Underground Film Festival, so since last Thursday to Sunday, I spent all
weekend there. So
a good place to be.
Yeah, so primarily I was watching an awful lot of shorts. Because I'd seen most of the features that were being shown there, because they're all Irish ones, and we tend to get sent them.
I like shorter shorts.
If a short is going to, you know, because there was a 29-minute short in there, and I wanted out, and it was in the middle of the program, and it was a problem.
And mine is usually a 12-13 minute limit.
Yeah,
so it's kind of where I'm at after that. I start to wander a little.
Yeah, there's some lovely like 7-8 minutes long. There was one that was three that was dreadful, but was over. So in 3 minutes, so it's grand. Some of them were very good. Some of them were appallingly bad. Because they're all Irish ones, I'm just going to focus on the ones that were good.
We'll come back to that issue.
Indeed.
And so the ones that were good included this documentary about the Irish New Wave cinema, which is being pioneered by Terry McMahon and Mark Connor, that sort of guerrilla independent filmmaking that's happening now. And so the documentary is called Tan Nua, which literally means New Wave.
Makes sense.
And so that's very good. It's about half an hour long, but it's interviews and with all the various different key players in this movement, and it's also like it shows footage from a number of the films. So it starts with Charlie Casanova, and then you know it shows stuff from Limp and stuff from all of those various movies that fit into that criteria. So that's very good, and it's worth watching. And the guys are currently trying to figure out what they're going to do with releasing it wise. So hopefully it'll end up online before the end of the year, because it's a zeitgeist type film, so it needs to get out
right
now. Then some of the student ones impressed me an awful lot. So there was the one that won the best student award, 1,000 Yards. The sound design is incredible. So that was nice. And then there was it was Unfold, which was just a beautiful looking film. It's about a guy who's a bit socially awkward, lives in a train carriage, but he ventures out into the city and he goes into a cafe and sits down, doesn't order anything at all. And the staff are a little wary of him, but you know, one of the girls tries to engage him and then finds out it's kind of a little bit of a love story, and it's nice, and it just looks so good for a student short.
You say suggesting that it was technically accomplished, man?
Yes. Oh no, the two things that, and we will get back to this, where Irish film tends to fall down is how in the look or in the sound, and these two were examples of both of these at the highest level from students, you know. So, so those two were very good. Then Skunky Dog as well. That won the best short, and that's just really good. Dirkidus, the Irish language short, which I'd seen before, that's still holds up.
You said it was very good. I think.
Yeah, it's going to be in Fingal, and it's going to be in Harrowtown as well. So people will get a chance to see it. And then there was a few others scattered there here and there. I can't remember them all now off the top of my head, but it was a great experience. I got to meet a lot of up and coming Irish filmmakers. They were all the independent guys, the guys who have their problems with the film board, you know, are getting funding for what they're trying to do. So that was most of my weekend. And then last night, I rewatched Tomorrow Never Dies.
To cap off a perfect weekend.
Oh, that was it, exactly. Yeah, so it is, or it was actually the night before, but it's just so, it's such a good, bad Bond film.
It's typical mid-range Bond.
Yeah.
Not particularly memorable, but when you're in it, it is fun.
Yeah.
Undeniably fun, and it's got a lot of great stuff in it. Brosnan is still a top four.
I still think, and I said it before, Brosnan's my favourite Bond.
I'm with you.
In not the best Bond films for most part.
No.
But my God, he's good. He is. For me, he epitomises Bond.
He plays Bond exactly as he needs to be. A suave bastard.
Yeah, I think he's perfect. I like him better than all the Bonds.
That little moment when he gets the car, and he gets the remote control for the car, and
And his Q's there trying to get the car to move, and he's like, that's very tricky, but you'll get used to it. And then Bond's like, let's see how she responds to my touch. And he drives the car around, and it's a cool moment, but then the car is brought back into him, and it stops straight in front of him, and he goes, I think we understand each other. And Q just turns around and goes,
doublets.
Exactly. And it's just brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, we missed Desmond Llewellyn.
Yes.
Tomorrow Never Dies, the opening pre-credit sequence, and up until Jonathan Pryce goes off the reservation, it's actually really good. Oh, well, basically, up until the moment when Terry Hatcher turns up in his room, it's really good. And after that, it kind of goes really downhill quite fast. But
I don't know. It's quite up and down across the board, but on the whole, I like it.
The motorbike sequence. Over the helicopter with Michelle Yeoh. That's fantastic.
Fantastic stunts. Great sets of fun. I think John Price's villain is actually quite weak. Terry Hatcher, annoying.
Yeah, she's not very good.
No. But on the plus side, it does have a Vincent Schiavelli cameo. So I'm all for that.
There we go. So, Philip, what have you been watching?
I've watched a lot. But first of all, I will report back. I had homework to do. Last week, I promised I would go and watch Frederick Wiseman's 4-hour documentary at Berkeley.
Yes,
I did.
And did you like
it? It was excellent. Absolutely.
I presume it's not the top 10.
you guessed correctly, sir. It's playing at one venue, and considering it's 4 hours on, you're not going to pay every day.
Yeah.
It's also playing at one venue only, I mean, in the combined UK and Ireland market, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, lucky us.
Yep.
It's fantastic. It just about justifies its running time. I mean, there's a lot of scenes where people are just, in fact, a lot of it is just people talking. But the stuff they're talking about, it's all the behind the scenes stuff that you never really think, well, it's not that you don't think about it, you wouldn't necessarily factor it in. It's all the vital stuff. It's all about questions of finances and pedigree and just trying to maintain a name. The basic idea is it's just a look behind the scenes at Berkeley University, which is the largest publicly funded university in the United States. And it's competing with all the privately funded ones to maintain a stature in the face of decreasing government funding. I will point out, for the sake of
Full disclosure,
that I am actually an employee of a publicly funded university, so perhaps I relate.
He was made go to see it.
I was not.
He'd be fired if he didn't.
To be honest, if some of my employers knew what was in it, they would have recommended I don't go see it because the basic point is everything where is struggling, everywhere has less money and is trying to make the best of it and not always easy. But it's the basic idea. Pragmatism has to trump idealism in the end because otherwise nothing will get done, and that's the way it goes. I love it. I know plenty of people won't, but
I will see it. I don't think I have 4 hours to spare at the moment. I will see it at some point, probably at home, I would imagine.
Yeah, worth a look.
It'll go VOD.
And I have to say, it's got me really in the mood for his new one, National Gallery, which I'm seeing next month.
It's 11 hours long, I believe.
Three.
Oh, okay. So, you know, I was being funny there. Sorry about that.
Jay does funny on occasion.
Once a week.
To be followed a few weeks later by the zoo. And basically what it's going to be is going to be like Bosco. It's going to be a magic door.
Sorry.
I also had a few rewatches of the weekend as well. I watched Gosford Park, of all things. Robert Altman's. Again, with the plumminess, as I had last week. It's fine. It's quite entertaining.
It's almost like he relates to this stuff.
No. My mother was a big fan of Upstairs, Downstairs. Shut up!
I remember liking
as,
it.
It's, as all nobility are.
It's good.
Right?
It is good, but, you know, for a film that's with such a great cast and such a great sense of time and place, it's just a pity it doesn't really give it. It throws in a plot it doesn't give a damn about. This whole murder mystery thing.
It's dull. It's a dull film. It's a very pretty film, but it's a dull film.
It's not as dull as you think.
I liked it. It's been a long... I don't know what year. When was it?
2001.
I haven't seen it since. then, I mean, that's a long time ago. But I remember enjoying it well enough.
It's a little
It's
a little too long, but it's, I mean, it's all Robert Altman directing an ensemble cast. You can't really go wrong.
And yeah, but it's not Nashville.
No,
which I only recently watched actually a couple of months back, which is still amazing.
You say it's not Nashville, very little is. But the cast is a great one. Shout out in particular to Helen Mirren, just because she's awesome in every possible way.
Yes, she is.
What else? I also rewatched, this is a re release last week in the IFI, Jim Jarmusch's Down by Law.
Which is so much fun. Yeah.
Lovely, low-key fun. John Lurie, Tom Waits, Roberto Benigni, put them in prison and watch the sparks fly. Ice cream, you scream, etc. It starts off a bit slow, but then it gets into the comedy eventually, and it's a hoot. It's a lovely, lovely little hoot. And then I capped it off just last night by rewatching. Well, I say rewatching. I only ever watched some of it way back when. Mike Leigh's Naked.
Oh, what a film.
And this is probably, as I said last week, I'm probably going to be watching a few of these three now in the time I see Mr. Turner. But this is another one. And oh my god.
It's an extraordinary film, I think.
If ever you buy it on DVD, it should be served with a stiff drink.
It's, I brought my now wife, then girlfriend, to see that in the IFI when we were just starting to go out.
Oh,
that's a test. That is. And she liked it, but I don't think she'd ever watch it again. I've watched it. I think I say about three or four times at this stage. Mm. I think it's possibly Leigh's masterpiece. For me, and like, you sound like you don't rate it.
Oh no! I loved it. I was intoxicated.
David Thewlis, how good is he?
The man is.
It's one of the performances of lifetime.
Incredible. The thing is, you want him to shut up. Yeah. But at the same time, what he's saying.
I see your boomerang came back.
Ah, that's right. You stick it all under the grill and leave it there. It's all doomsday. How did he do all that?
He's great. He's just so great. And he's a bastard.
He's horrible.
He's a horrible, horrible man.
Yeah. But he keeps you on the side because you just want to see what the heck is going to happen.
It's grim, isn't it?
Incredibly so. And it gets worse. Leigh's done some grim films. But this is as grim as it gets.
And it doesn't leave you with any hope either.
No.
Which is the crushing blow of it in some ways. It's the hammer blow at the end,
but it's fantastic.
It is. It really is.
So yeah, that was my fun-filled weekend.
So you went to bed very happy last night?
Oh, Lord. Thrilled! Absolutely thrilled, I was.
So moving on to this week's movie news. So My Name Is Emily started shooting this week. So that's Simon Fitzmaurice. He's directing. Basically, Simon Fitzmaurice was diagnosed with ALS, and he now is directing by... he wrote the script by the movement of his eyes, and especially adapted a program, and now he's going to direct a movie the exact same way.
This makes me feel incredibly lazy, I have to say.
We have use of all our limbs. Yeah. What are we doing here?
I sit on the couch and watch stuff and complain.
So the film...
Works for me.
Yeah.
So the film stars Evanna Lynch of Harry Potter fame, and in the title role as Emily, and Michael Smiley as her dad.
Ah, I love Michael Smiley.
Oh, he's a touch of class of Michael Smiley, you know.
Open up and let the devil in. Oh, I must rewatch Field in England.
So,
sorry.
Yeah. So the film that start filming on Tuesday. We don't have very much of anything from it yet.
Interesting, though. It'll be interesting to see it.
Best of luck to all concerned. That's a great idea. Great project.
Yep. So the other big news on the Irish movie front was the fact that Twitter went ballistic over certain comments made a month ago by...
A certain person.
John Michael McDonagh. When John Michael McDonagh said that Irish films are shit, basically.
For all intents and purposes, that's what we said. They were technically accomplished. They weren't... Very good.
He says, I'm not a fan of Irish movies. I don't find them to be that technically accomplished, and I don't find them that intelligent. So I'm trying to get away from the description of Calvary as an Irish film in a way, right? So he's trying to get rid of the description of it in a way.
Which is a pity, because it's full of Irish characters, it's set in Ireland, was made with Irish money, and featured a largely Irish crew.
And, thematically... is an Irish story. It's a story.
Very relevant to Ireland here and there.
You couldn't juxtapose that film into any other country and have it thematically relevant. It's not.
Listen, It's a fucking Irish film. That's obvious for starters. That's the first thing you say. It is an Irish film.
It is
an Irish film. It got €1 million pretty much off the off the film board funded. As Philip said, cast, crew, story, themes, actors, the lot. It's marketed with bloody Sligo being beautiful in the country. I mean, that's it.
It won an IFTA for best Irish film.
Didn't he come and collect it?
He did, yes.
So if surely it was an Irish film, he wouldn't be there.
And at the ceremony, he made sure to thank no one but himself.
So, it's an Irish film. It's clearly an Irish film. The first thing to say, I think, I'm just reading exactly that comment you read there. How can you dismiss a whole country's film ever, and anyone like say that this country cannot produce good films? No matter what country it is, it's absurd. I mean, laws of averages. Mm. I mean, it just, you know, X amount of films are made, some be good, some be bad, some mostly indifferent. That's the kind of standard narrative.
Pretty much.
So it's a nonsense for starters. Like, it's an absolute nonsense phrase. He may have issues with how Irish films are marketed, how to sell, do people go see them, and that they're all valid concerns. But
you voice them very badly.
Yes, you did. I mean, you can start a discussion about how Irish films are, why they are, why people are sometimes turned off by them, just the notion of it.
Mm.
And that's a fair enough argument, fair enough conversation, but
Lord knows
he's made money.
Yeah, like, Lord knows why he complained. Yeah, people flocked to Calvary.
And The Guard.
Calvary was the second most successful Irish film released this year, and The Guard was the most successful Irish film released this decade until Mrs. Brown came along. Right, so
maybe that's the crux of his argument.
No, but the thing is, right, so his next part was, you see, the problem is that they, the audience, know that lots of Irish films aren't very good, and they're actually hesitant about going to see the movie themselves. So when you're making a film there, you're trying to convince the Irish audience, no, it's not like all those terrible Irish movies you've seen before. Now, so, counting that against the fact that both of his films have been amongst the most successful films of the year when they've been
produced,
so it's not the case. Irish people will not go see a bad Irish film. Case in point, The Sea, which made $4,000. But people will go see a good Irish film. Even if that good Irish film isn't marketed all that well. Case in point being the Stag.
Yeah, and the thing is, you could take the word Irish out as people generally shouldn't go see bad films and should try and go see good films. As like if there's enough reviews or there's marketing points that says this is pretty good, people will generally go and see it.
Yeah, because for the average couple, you're talking 25 to 30 euro for a cinema trip.
Rocking a family, you're probably talking 50.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's an investment, not only of your time but of your money to go see these things. And right, granted, you will get the American films will be much more marketed at you than the Irish ones will be ordinarily, and so you're more likely to go that way. But we need to reward the Irish films that have been produced that are good.
And I think people like he's been The Guard and Calvary had plenty of money for marketing, which a lot of Irish films don't have.
No,
and I think marketing is a huge problem in Irish film. Like it's. There's a small amount of money to put it a little out there a little bit. It opens in a small cinema somewhere. Doesn't really do that much business. It's pulled straight away for something else, so nobody gets to see it. It doesn't have the money to spend where you're seeing the Calvary ads for weeks on end.
This week, Noble is really
exactly. I mean,
the sight of every second
people
of the
will bus. Go to see these films once they, like, visibility is a huge problem for our shows, particularly in the lower end of the budget. They don't have the stars, they don't have Brendan Gleeson propping up the centre of it.
Mm.
And there's people kind of working their ass off to try and get films into the cinema, and I'm sure, I like a perfect example. I saw Good Vibrations, almost missed it at the cinema, caught the last screen of it in the Lighthouse before it finished. Now I absolutely adore Good Vibrations. It was my top 5 film of the year last year, best Irish film of last year. But it hadn't really got a star. It had a great story. I mean, the Terry Hooley Good Vibrations record thing in Northern Ireland, and it's a great story. But and that had a little bit of money to spend, not a huge amount to spend. So it was kind of largely invisible for a lot of people. I mean, Mark Kermode pushed in England, so I think he got a little bit more fanfare there because he was a huge fan of it. But in general, and that's as kind of as big a release or as kind of as celebrated an Irish film as it was last year. And practically nobody went to see it.
I'm sure
it's a pity because
it's
a well-made film.
It's a terrible. Like, I loved it. It's just so much fun.
It is a lot of fun.
It's great, and the cast is great, and like, it's a far superior film to either John Michael McDonough's films. And when you get right down to it, I mean, he can slag off whatever films or whatever kind of industry he wants, but I don't see 2 decades from now people talking about either of these films like people talk about, say, My Left Foot or whatever, any of those kind of films. Or The Butcher Boy, say, for example. Or even the Tupac Collins films the last couple of years, Living Cold Land and Silence, which are terrific.
They are far
superior. And I know you mentioned this to Philip when we talked about it. And Living Cold Land has more to say about Ireland than Calgary could say in a month or something about a state in the nation.
It is. And that got next to no attention.
Practically no budget for it. Like, I mean, it's a harder sell. It's a documentary. But even for the small release that something like that would get, it got precious little fanfare. Mm. John McGuire made a point on Twitter, which always made me laugh, and I pointed out that Calgary wasn't even the best film released that month. Or shown released that month, because The Coded Land was released a week or two later.
In sum, Living in a Coded Land will be out on DVD and VOD shortly. Make sure you see it.
And also, will, in my opinion, 10 years from now, will be regarded as a milestone in Irish documentary filmmaking. Mm. Whereas people would be like, what, Calgary? Really?
Yeah. Well, we hope. I'd imagine I'd be so, because it's just not good enough.
No, it's not.
It thinks, it's one of those films that really annoys me. It thinks it's saying something, but it just isn't. It's hot air.
It's badly written. And that's like, the screenplay is poor. Mm. That's its main problem. It has everything else. It has the cast it wants. It looks great. And it does look great.
Great soundtrack,
too. All those great technical people that are Irish. Well, apparently.
Not necessarily in the case of Calvary. A lot of them were British based. So,
okay.
But the script was John Michael McDonagh himself. So
yeah,
and that is where most the dialogue in particular is where most of that.
And do we?
And the characterizations, just caricatures.
Yeah. And what happens next? Are we funding his next film? Do we know?
Not his next one, but possibly the one after that.
That's a big possibly.
The third part of his
his
self-titled or suicide trilogy, whatever it is.
I would like to
see one with Brendan Gleeson going around in a wheelchair around South London.
I would like to see the original board make a bit of a stand on it. I don't know if they can, but and say no, sorry, John.
Well,
they've made money out of it.
Their comments the other day, when asked by a number of outlets, including ourselves, what the to respond to what John Michael McDonagh said was to say Calvary is a great Irish film, and it goes to show what great films can be made by the Irish people and if they put their mind to it. No,
it's a funny response, actually.
It was an exercise in saying absolutely nothing.
As these things generally are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was a chance to say we are disappointed with the remarks made by.
Well, the only way they did it is by saying that it's an Irish film and insisting upon it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
So the reason McDonagh doesn't want it to be classified as an Irish film is that he sees all Irish films as being bad, and he wants it to be classified as a film that took place in Ireland with Irish characters.
Really?
Right. But an awful lot of people who have come to the defense of that position, and I mean position is not an irrational one, is the case that you don't see other cinemas of other countries lauding the things. But you do. French cinema, British cinema. They always go, this is an incredible British film. Like Nil by Mouth or something.
Look at the Baptists. They have best British film.
Gravity was considered best British film. Yeah.
But no, exactly.
Of course,
every nation is and should be proud of their own cinema if there's something worth shouting about. I mean,
and Irish cinema certainly does.
Yeah, I mean, with problems, admittedly, but
every other industry does.
It does, and absolutely does.
A film came out within a month of the release of Calvary that you could actually make that argument about it being a film with Irish characters set in Ireland, but not an Irish film, and that was Frank.
Ah.
Yes.
Not Calvary. Frank is the one that argument could be made about.
Also, Frank's a better film to start.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And one I rewatched recently, actually, and it still stands up. Still a bit wobble in the middle, but my God, that last 20 minutes.
Mm.
Anyway, we're not going to bog down in the review. But,
no. But I will cherish my signpost until the day.
Yes, and so you should.
Mm.
But Ireland is a small market. We haven't got the money of some of the bigger nations, so we can't put the money behind films that some of the ones can. Yeah. The Irish Film Board can give out a X amount of money per year to films, and they usually bankroll between 15 and 20 films in the course of a year, right? So, Calvary took by far and away the largest amount of any of the films, Irish films that were released with the Film Board with Film Board funding. So, I mean, but it's the standard bearer for the year for Irish film, and he says that.
And when you take the money, and I think Donald Carr points out, you at least have the good manners to say thank you and go about your business.
Yeah, I mean,
like, decency, regardless of opinion or whether you agree with the opinion or not agree, like, just be decent.
Isn't it just blatantly biting the hand that feeds
it? Isn't it much easier to say that this is not a typical Irish film rather than this is not an Irish film? Or I don't want you to think of it as an Irish film. I don't want you to think of it as a typical.
He probably didn't
Irish
say that because he thought it would be misconstrued and thought of as a bit of a, I don't know, just a bit up himself. Well, we're thinking that anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's not, I don't want to get bogged down in how much I didn't like a lot of Calvary. So
we've been there before.
We've been there before. I've got exhausted by the circuit around the year. It's going to be interesting to see how the reaction to him should he come back looking for more money for projects. Or even if he turns up in Ireland for anything, advertising another film, that's all he's going to be asked about. I mean, that's what I'd ask him.
Hmm. And rightly so.
Yeah, I mean, he should be able to either stand behind it or make a groveling apology.
Here is a chance for a filmmaker who has made his name through making Irish films to
champion it.
To champion it. Yeah. To be, you know, to laud us from the heavens, going, this is what new Irish cinema is about, this is what we can do, you know, rather than running and hiding or running in the opposite direction, you know.
Yeah, right, because
turn into the skid.
Calvary had better reviews outside of Ireland, and if you're talking to an international audience, be it in America or Europe or Britain or wherever, you could actually say that in that way, exactly that point, and where it would have some sort of heft. Where the reviews are strong for it, you can say, well, this is what we're doing there. Mm. But no.
It's infuriating.
It really is.
That's the way that he's comported himself. It's just,
no matter what context it's in, it's quite unprofessional.
It really is. That's it, to be on end of.
It's not the first time that he did it. He did it earlier in the year, too. I mean, in April, when the film was coming out, he was also talking down about the state of the industry.
But I don't understand his complaints if he's getting the money he gets. And,
like, again, I mean, he's making the films here about here. What does he want?
It was the 19th highest grossing independent release in the US.
This year.
Yep, made $3.3 million, $3.34 million. The 18th was the Irish co-production The Grand Seduction.
Ah,
was it?
Yeah.
Really?
So The Grand Seduction made more money than Calvary in the US.
As much as I hate The Grand Seduction, that kind of pleases me in a way.
And, same here, actually.
And the 17th was the Irish co-production What If?
Really? Ah.
So
there you go.
Yeah, there's three Irish co-productions in the top 25 independent films released in the US, and there's an Irish director sitting at number 5 with this John Carney with Begin Again.
Well, at least we're, you know, you can't say the Irish Film Board is not putting money into things that aren't working. I mean, it's clearly working.
Well, there's the case in point. If Irish films were rubbish, would three of them and one by an Irish four be in the top 25 independent films in the US?
Yeah.
Top grossing independent films in the US.
And also, he's lamenting the lack of Irish technical skill in films. What's at number one? Annie Atkins' work in the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yep. And then also we have James McGarvey, who's one of the finest cinematographers going. So.
Yeah. And we'll see his work in Avengers 2.
We won't get into the John Moore conversation in there.
Yeah, but granted, most of them leave the country, so most of them are really technically gifted people because of the size of the market. I mean, they are going to get better offers from the UK or from the US. So that is the nature of it. But we should be doing what we can bring them back or to promote what we have here. You know?
And you see something like just as a mention in that regard of what can happen with Jared Barrett.
Yeah.
Who's going to deal with Film 4 and his film's coming out. Glassland, is it?
Glassland, yeah.
And after the excellent Pilgrim Hill, and I'm sure we'll be following that up as well.
The last time won at Galway.
Yeah. So, I mean, there you go.
And Terry McMahon is off in America at the moment because his film is showing
and it's getting raves as well.
Yeah, and it's going to be shown in front of the Directors Guild of America in Hollywood.
Fine work.
There you go. John Michael McDonagh.
Suck that on that. Your pipe.
Sorry.
Lovely.
Right, we'll move on to the top 10.
Yes, something that's guaranteed not to make our blood boil. The weekly top 10. Brace yourselves.
At 10, The 100-Foot Journey.
No.
Still hanging around.
It's second week.
Like I said before, Helen Mirren, she owns.
Yeah, and it has a very definite audience, you know. It only made €496 per location, so it's really low.
It's going to end up with less than €90,000, probably.
It'll close out on or about the 90, yeah. Mm. On 82 at the moment, so. But, yeah, it made 22 over the weekend. It'll probably, over the next 3 to 4 days before it leaves most of the cinemas on Thursday, you know, you're talking about making the same amount. So, then at 9, straight in at 9, straight in a tree in the UK, but 9 here.
Ah.
Pride.
Which I saw this weekend.
Yeah.
I told you I had a busy weekend.
You did.
I did. It's fine. It's quite sweet. It's very entertaining. It's the story of how a gay rights group in London, rallied behind a Welsh mining village and the people living there as they were suffering through the miners' strikes in the mid-80s. And it's, as I say, a sweet tale about finding common ground and finding friends where you never thought you'd have any. A couple of scenes aside where it deals a few harsh kind of blows of reality, overall, as I say, quite sweet. There's scenes where there's one memorable scene in the middle where one of the group, Dominic West's character, he teaches the ladies in this town, or he shows off his dance moves to them, and he's about one hip thrust away from starting a musical number. You've seen a lot of this stuff before. They're trying to jazz up what could have been another true story that got and wrote. It has a bit more energy than most. It is quite entertaining, though, I'll give it that. It could have used perhaps a bit more bite. But then again, if it had a bit more bite, would I have enjoyed it as much?
Mm.
Probably not.
At 8, The Guest. So it's actually...
The Guest, is he still staying here?
Yeah, well, The Guest is it's only in 18 cinemas, but it has a fairly high screen average of €1,288, and it made almost twice as much money per location here as it did in the UK. So it's getting much better reception here than it is in its home market.
Hmm.
Or one of its home markets, you know, because it's half American film, some British money in it as well. So.
It's okay.
I enjoyed it more than you did, but
It's fine as a genre exercise.
Yeah. I think it shows that Adam Wingard can, you know, that there is something definitely there.
Give him a stronger script and I'll be all there to see it when he films it.
At 7, Before I Go to Sleep.
Too late.
Somehow this is making money.
What?
It's not making much money, but it's making more money than The Guest, and The Guest is significantly
better.
You've
got three big bankable star. Well, I say bankable. Nicole Kidman has not been bankable.
But she's
a
name.
She's a name. Colin Firth. There's a name. That Mark Strong. Right. I'm glad to say he's now a name.
You've got a good strong name.
Go to sleep.
So at 6, Guardians. 7 weeks in the
top
10.
It just won't go away.
Yeah. So yeah, 7 weeks. It made
$2.2 million.
I blame you.
I'm going again.
He's put like the last €700 from Noah's pocket, I think.
I'm going before it leaves the cinema. I'm going to go again.
Why? Just in case. It
You're a masochist.
$2.5 million. You are a masochist.
It was fun. I had a lot of fun watching it, so I'm going to go watch it again. At 5, film I had no fun watching, Sex Tape. This is not a good film. There's no universe in which this is considered funny.
By the way, it's all, you know, they shot it on their digital camera, it's all cloud, whatever. It's not a tape.
Yeah, well.
And also,
yeah.
From what I'm told, it's not that sexy either.
No, it's. It has very, very little going for it. I mean, even I like Jason Segel, and I still don't like this film. It's
I like Cameron Diaz, and this looks horrible.
Yeah.
This looks demeaning.
No,
she's actually a fine comic actress.
She is. She really is.
She should and could be doing a lot better than this.
Exactly. She could be doing, like, number four, Lucy.
Yes.
Yeah. So Lucy is...
It's fantastic.
Yeah, she's doing well.
Yeah, it probably has passed a million.
Ah, nice.
This is good. This makes me happy. Yeah. This makes me very happy because I'm championing it to anybody that listens.
Jay's happy, people. Enjoy while
this won't happen again this year.
You won't be happy once we come to, what's that, number three. 3 weeks in the charts. Let's be cops.
Let's this not be cops.
At number three. Here's the thing, right? This film has been at the third position since it came out, basically, right?
Good Lord.
Good God.
But, yeah, it's consistently bringing in the same kind of money week on week. It's really strange.
I'll tell you,
it's on the slow burner.
When I went to see, I think it might have been Lucy, but I can't remember, the trailer for this play. Actually, I've seen it a couple of times, but it was the first time I'd seen it. And I sat pretty much stony silent all the way through it, going, this is dreadful. And I'm probably seeing all the best jokes, and I'm having even so much as smile. I need a mercy smile in me.
I'm with you on that, because I saw it.
And what's really interesting about it, there was laughter here and there for bits of it. And I'm going, what am I watching here? What am I missing that everybody is seeing? Well, not everybody. There was a few. This wasn't a knee slap around the cinema. Mm. But there was laughter.
There were titters.
There are people who find this funny.
You want to know
the money says so.
Well, one of the jokes is a guy falling flat in his face after he's shouted at by a cop. So, I mean, it's a pratfall. People find pratfalls.
I love seeing somebody tripping on the street. That makes me happier. But I'm not going to pay 10 quid to see it.
You want to know who's going to see this, though. I asked a work colleague of mine. We were talking about weekend plans, whatever. And she said she took 3 12, 13-year-olds along to Let's Be Cops.
Yeah, the market is for those.
It is.
Yeah.
Teenagers, but...
Yeah,
they enjoyed it. She actually admitted it wasn't great, but she laughed a few times. So somebody...
So it's undemanding fare.
It's not made for you, Jay.
It certainly is not made for me. I think that's fair.
New entry at 2. The Philip Seymour Hoffman starring A Most Wanted Man.
Oh, we most want him back. I talked about this last week. It's okay. It's a not bad thriller, but... not a whole lot to distinguish it besides the performances. It's Philip Seymour Hoffman, and I think his unfortunate passing is, I hate to say it might be driving its figures up, but you know, that ain't bad for, well...
For the type of film,
it is. Yeah. A more adult, vaguely legalese kind of thriller. It's doing quite solid business for this kind of film.
And at 1, The Box Trolls.
Oh.
Animation is back at number 1.
Back. Did it ever go away?
I want to see this. I haven't seen it. This looks great.
But look at this. There's no other animated film, unless you count Guardians of the Galaxy, in the top 10. This is going to rule for weeks on end.
It'll be around, but it'll be in the charts.
Oh, it will. It's going to do huge money. It's already made around 180,000 so far.
Yeah. That was
huge.
With this preview weekend and this weekend. But, I mean, some of the animated films that came out this year, that was their second week or third week.
Yeah.
We'll see how this holds. I imagine it'll be a very small drop.
Oh, yeah, probably, yeah. But, I mean, until we hit midterm. You know, you're not going to see those numbers really go up.
I don't know. So, we'll see. Well done to the guys at Leica Animation.
Yeah, they do great work, so we wholeheartedly endorse this number 1.
Represent.
Yeah. So we move on to what's out this week.
Yes.
Yeah.
So a veritable smorgasbord of it.
It's quite a list this week.
It is, but there's a few.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? September tends to churn out a lot of films, and not necessarily all of them
masterpieces.
Yeah,
no,
tends to be a dumping ground for a lot of things. So the big one, the big release this week is the Liam Neeson starring A Walk Among the Tombstones. It should be amongst.
I will get back to that because there's another time in where there's something wrong.
Right. Talk about grim titles. Is this the possible Liam Neeson retired cop thriller that might actually be good?
Yes.
Yes, okay, it just is. Checking.
Yeah, no, that's sorry. The word of mouth has been decent on it, and
which is far better than most of the films Neeson has made of late, with the exception of the Lego Movie.
Yes.
Hi, buddies.
Thank you, Jack.
That's
Yeah, so Liam Neeson stars as a retired cop who has an alcohol problem, who has pulled out of retirement, when a case forces him to do so. You know, so yeah, as is like. We've cast Liam Neeson. Now we're going to write a plot. He's a retired cop.
I think, from what I've seen...
You had me a retired cop.
Yeah.
From what I've seen, I think it's probably the grit of this thing that's going to sell us, because a lot of the stuff has just been so kind of OTT throwaway, like non-stop. Yeah.
This has got a nice-looking visual aesthetic to it, so...
No, it looked, I like the look of it. It could be good.
The trailer's a bit generic, but...
Yeah, that's always that.
But you know what?
It's Liam Neeson.
We love Liam
Neeson. He's a national treasure.
He is.
Yeah.
That's absolutely fair. He is a national treasure. And brilliantly, while we're suffering through all these action films, he's in the new Martin Scorsese film, Silence. So, you know, return to proper acting also.
Which is not a remake of Pat Collins' film.
No, it's not. I wouldn't imagine so.
And, of course, he's also Oscar Schindler and Good Cop.
Yes.
And indeed, Pat.
And Rob Roy on this day of Scottish Independence.
Yes.
Well, not yet.
Scottish Independence voting.
Ah, well. Undecided voters for whatever.
Yeah, so the other grammatically inaccurate title is the Zach Braff starring Wish I Was Here.
Wish I Were Here. For goodness sake, don't these people know the subjunctive?
Also, I don't want to be there. Whatever it is.
Zach Braff. One TV show. One movie 10 years ago, and suddenly he swans in and thinks he owns the place all over again. Kickstart this.
So, yeah, so this film was a Kickstarter crowdfunded film. So here was a Hollywood millionaire asking people to put their money into it.
This is the big thing about it. People really resented the fact he did this.
I resented the fact he was making their film.
Not a fan of Garden State.
Garden State gets the minor... Lost in Translation award for me, whereas you watch it the first time, that's not bad actually, you seem to kind of catch something.
Yeah.
Watch again, it's like, good lord, this is a dreadful piece of. Like, it's a Peter Sarsgaard away from collapsing in itself.
Ah, Peter Sarsgaard.
But he's great and everything. As he is in Night News, which I didn't mention that.
Ah, sorry. Yes, indeed he is.
But, yeah, I'm not a really Zach Braff. Like, it's only something Zach Braff dreamy look across the whatever water things you can do.
Dreamy? I just want to punch him.
Yeah, I know, but he has this, you know, life is so hard for. Well, I'm so middle class.
The basic plot of the film sees Braff play a struggling actor who has no hope of a job, and his dad is true. Mandy Patinkin, and
he's dragging Mandy Patinkin.
I like Mandy Patinkin,
and of course
you're ruining.
I'm in the Princess.
Your name is Zach Braff. You're ruining Mandy Patinkin's career. Prepare to die. Thank you.
Inconceivable.
Yes.
Oh, it is inconceivable. Homeland might have already known.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So he's trying to reconnect then with his family when his dad takes a turn for the worst. But Brogan, friend of the pod, Brogan Hayes, says that this is the film of the week.
It must be a slow week, though.
She's a fan of Zach Braff, so...
Brogan, and
was involved in...
Sounds like a beginning of a musical.
Rawhide.
And was involved in the Kickstarter campaign she donated to.
There you go. That's a vested interest right there. We call shenanigans.
Note to self, give Brogan Hayes grief on Twitter later. Sorry, Brogan.
But her review...
But you will get the grief.
Her review is very good and available on Hayes at the Movies, which is her site. So she is one of the better Irish film critics, so we do trust her opinion on many, many things. I'm sick of Zach Braff, so I just can't do it. Also out this week, the Nick Cave starring 20,000 Days on Earth.
I can't wait to watch this, because here is a man who makes what could have been a standard film about himself, but no, we take a narrative, we apply it to it, and we just let Nick Cave continue to control his own myth, and God damn it, I love him for that.
He's great.
He is marvellous. Just Oh, he's nuts. I've never met him. I'd love to. And this looks fantastic.
Yeah.
The last time I saw a film with Kylie Minogue in it, was Holy Walker. So I'm
obviously. Oh, yes. Which is sang.
Oh, with her and Nick Cave, that's
there you go.
That's some song.
Looks mad. Can't yeah. Wait.
We also have the big Irish release of the week is Noble. The story of Christina Noble.
Oh, you get it? Her name was Noble, and she was Noble. Oh!
Directed by Stephen Bradley and starring Deirdre O'Kane.
This I've only seen the trailer, and it looks very sugary sweet.
Oh, very. As sugary sweet as a story about a woman helping out Vietnamese orphans can be.
Well, I mean, the sentiment's fine. I mean, good on her. I mean,
it's a fine story. Christina Noble has done fantastic work.
But it looks a little too sweet to me. I think I'd be more inclined towards a documentary, which is not House of Strange Fiction. I think the story is more interesting than that kind of.
It doesn't need a narrative fiction treatment at all.
No, and I think I'll wait for the documentary.
Yeah, I asked my mother, who would be amongst the target audience for this film, what would she go see? And she said, no, she hates Deirdre O'Kane. So this is
all. Ah, yeah. So it's a fine comedian.
Yeah, that's what I.
No, so that was her answer too. But no,
fair point. You like her, you like, I suppose.
Yeah. Yes.
I imagine Noble will do quite well. At least on the strength of the advertising alone.
I would have thought it'd do okay.
It's going to do very well.
You throw a bit of money on it.
We're going to see that in the top 10 next week.
Friend of the pod, Darren Mooney, called it the second worst film he's seen this year, and it's a close run thing between it and Transformers.
That seems harsh.
Yeah.
I even judging by the kind of really sweet trailer and. I imagine it's very sentimental at points. I couldn't imagine it being anything like the abomination that is Michael Bay.
We can hope.
Oh, God. I mean, if you're making films that are being compared to Alien, oh, no, we won't go for it.
Then, the story of Posh Boys, the Riot Club.
Posh twats being posh twats. Who cares? But also, I've seen those posters. I've seen who's in it. I almost want to punch these guys more than I want to punch Zach Braff. That's not good. Sam Claflin, Max Irons, Douglas Booth.
It's everybody it's all the Tory party's sons, isn't it, essentially? I mean, I would be of an old lefty persuasion, so I won't be going to see the Riot Club.
Well, besides that, I mean, why on earth would we want to see, it's one thing to have central characters who are unlikable, but this isn't Mike Lee. This isn't Naked.
No, it's not.
In fact, it's quite disappointing. This is directed by Lona Scherfig, who started off great with stuff like Wilbur Wants to Kill Himself and An Education. Then she made that sappy pile that is One Day with Anne Hathaway and Jim Sturgess. And now this.
Upper-class twits of the year, Rogan calls it. So.
Oh, just. Well, that's essentially it. This guy goes to college, gets into this exclusive society, and hijinks and crime ensues. Pass the Chardonnay.
I saw this about 15 years ago, Joshua Jackson, and it was called Skulls.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, but now it couldn't be as bad as a skull, surely.
I mean, no, I won't be seeing this. The whole kind of...
the only posh boys I want to see are the Winklevoss twins in The Social Network.
The Winklevi.
Winklevi.
The Winklevi. Great. Yeah, we're going to pass in the Riot Club.
Yep.
Somebody else can have that laugh on it.
Or lack thereof.
Yes.
So also out is a young adult
adaptation. There must be at least a week
another
since
one. What one is it this time?
The Giver.
Oh no, Meryl, call your stylist. You've gone wrong.
Speaking of Meryl calling your stylist, have you seen the poster for Into the Woods where she looks...
That's terrifying.
Yeah,
kid, we're going to go see that.
Wow.
Why is it every single one of these young adult adaptations has to have some big reputable star slumming it? This time we have two. Meryl and... Jeff, what are you doing?
I know, in fairness, Jeff has made some bad choices, you know.
Yeah, but why do they all have to feel the need to slum with these young adult adaptations?
He's so someone just thinks of a big check and says, whatever amount you want down there.
I'm sorry, but unless you're good to be,
he was in R.I.P.D. Yeah. He'll take any fucking check.
Okay, it can't be as bad as R.I.P.D. We'll give it that. Anyway, what?
But the book is very good. The book is one of the first of the young adult ones. It's like it predates most. Of them. Basically, this book is the John Carter of young adult.
Stop! Please stop now. You're
somebody not, give me a reason why I should give her a crap.
Hey.
Ooh. Speaking of movies that you probably won't want to give a crap about, Think Like a Man 2, because Think Like a Man was, well, was dreadful, so
I didn't see it.
I haven't seen it, but did that get a big release?
No, it didn't. It did well in the States.
I'm a little resistant to Kevin Hart. I imagine this is not going to convert me.
Again, he's one of these guys, he's made his name over there, but he's proving difficult to sell.
Yeah.
Overseas.
Yeah.
And of course, overseas is the key market these days. This is what all those execs will tell you.
Yeah.
Well, he hits one of the demographics in the US. I mean, there is a large audience, a large African American audience in the
US. This is an all African American cast. Yeah, that's the first one. I think, though, if they want them to crack overseas, you need to set the third one in China. This is what Transformers has taught us.
So, basically, like Rush Hour.
No, they'll bring Chris Tucker back. No.
Or Shanghai Nights.
Actually, I like Shanghai Nights. Shanghai Nights is forgettable.
Yeah. And then the last film that's out this week is Woody Allen is back again.
Oh, yes, Lord. He is. Magic in the Moonlight. I had a chat today on Twitter with somebody who was saying, his name, I can't remember who it was, but I'll come back.
It's the guy from Cinedu, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. About the kind of the lazy kind of reviewing and writing on the late career Woody Allen. The
late career, is it dead?
Well, you know, the kind of this century's films, I suppose, for want of a better word.
Well,
the last decade.
I'll tell you what, let's say the last 15 years, because there's definitely a split after Deconstructing Harry.
Yeah.
Or no, not even that, Sweet and Low Down. After Sweet and Low Down, then you have to admit there's a slight wobble in the quality.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting for a second.
And indeed, in some cases, it's more than slight. It's woeful. Absolutely dreadful, some of his films. But I do get what you're saying, though, that it's very become too easy to dismiss the new Woody Allen.
It seems that a lot of the reviews are already written before the film has been seen a lot of the time, I think. And that's a problem.
The posters were atrocious.
The poster, nobody. But
never judge a film by the poster.
Yeah, because it's a poster.
But yeah, but
it was awful, though, I must say.
Dreadful poster. And the trailers weren't great either.
Well, I don't know. Well, it was okay.
Some of the reviews in America weren't very favorable, but the reviews over this side seem to be better. And some of the reviews from people on Twitter that I kind of respect have really liked it. So
that's Craig Williams you were talking to. Earlier.
Yes.
Yeah, so
it looks quite sweet. I mean, at the very worst, it'll be inoffensive.
Yeah.
Emma Stone's clairvoyant, or alleged clairvoyant, is being investigated by Colin Firth's magician/debunker. It's set in the 1920s, set along the south coast of France.
Yeah.
Again, it looks very enjoyable. And what would be wrong with that?
Yeah, and anything more, that's a bonus, I would say, for any film.
I don't imagine this is going to hit the heights of Blue Jasmine.
No, I mean, Blue Jasmine was my favourite fiction film of last year.
Wow.
It was one of the only fiction film that got 5 stars for me last year. It was Blue Jasmine.
I was actually surprised when I found Crack my top 10.
It's
been a long time since Woody Allen.
Number two, only Jack the Killing beat it to number one. I think it's an absolute instant classic and a late masterpiece.
I don't judge, and it was also in my top 10, so...
Yeah. And
we all agree.
He's still capable of it.
He is. And
well, it helped to have Cate Blanchett, though.
But he wrote it together. Yeah, exactly.
And as well as that, you have to admire the work ethic of a 78-year-old who turns out a film a year.
And generally speaking, that worst are generally watchable.
Is Cassandra's Dream watchable?
Cassandra's Dream is probably the worst one of the decade, I would say, the last 15 years.
Matchpoint.
I love Matchpoint.
Really?
It's on the top 20. Do you even read my articles I sent you?
Yeah, no, I know.
It's in his top 10 underrated.
I think
it's actually brilliant.
I still agree with that.
I'm pretty much on my own in this. There's very few kind of There's one or two I think that I've kind of agreed, but
you've come out of hiding.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. I love Midnight Paris. I thought it was great.
Midnight Paris is very sweet, very enjoyable.
I like Whatever Works. Just looking through the list, I wasn't a massive fan of Picture in the Barcelona.
No,
weirdly,
no,
enough.
It's not.
I wasn't a huge fan either. I thought it very souffle.
Very much enjoyed Scoop. I enjoyed Melinda.
Did you enjoy Wimbledon? No.
That wasn't him.
But yeah, no. If you like Match Point, it's just films about tennis. I just want to know.
It's not. I'm gonna stop winding me up, Niall.
Again, you seem to be just giving. I won't say contrarian. Just reviews seem to oppose a consensus.
I saw Match Point in the cinema when it came out, and I thought it brilliant when I saw it, and I remember the reviews being pretty good for it as well.
The reviews
and
were good at the time.
There was
a backlash.
Yeah, I didn't understand it because I actually thought people and still think people are seeing a different movie.
I thought it was pretty good when I saw it, but I really need to rewatch it. I haven't seen it since not long after it came out.
It's very cynical and very dark and really weird because there's violence in it, which is extraordinarily rare for the Woody Allen film.
That's the thing. That's probably what turned a lot of people off.
But I think it's very clever and it's. Generally, there's a theme in most of his films, like where, you know, say the danger of nostalgia in Midnight Paris, you know, that kind of everything was better back in the day. Where this one in Match Point, and this is what really, really brilliant, I think, is how much luck plays in part in absolutely everybody's life. And we like to pretend we're all in control of our destiny, etc., etc. And we are not. And the feeling of helplessness and things getting away from you pervades that film, and it makes it much, much stronger than people go ahead for.
Still not an excuse for Hollywood ending, though.
No. Listen, you can't have it
everywhere.
A career that long and not throw a few stinkers out. I mean, every filmmaker has them.
True.
When he hits highs, my God, the highs.
They are high.
And he's made a lot of films that are at least 4 stars.
Oh, yeah.
He's a great, great filmmaker. Anyway, I'll be seeing Magic of the Moonlight this weekend.
Very good.
And I'll report back forthwith.
So, you're the one with homework this weekend. Good. Report back to us next week. Report back to us all, indeed.
Yes, and we'll leave it there for the week. Ciao.
Toodaloo. Adios.